Chapter 20. Death Among Us. Spearhead. The Angel and the Warhawk. Imperial Palace Airspace, 7th of Quartus.
Get off my tail!
Aisha screamed. She yanked the stick of Blue Zephyr hard, sending the Panthera into a bone-crushing curve to escape her pursuer. Enemy ships were all over them. A dual-pilot stiletto fighter exploded at her left, taken out by the Legiones Astartes ship gunning for her. Bright tracer fire streaked by. The fuselage made a dull clang as a las cannon beam clipped her. She shot out a hand to silence screaming systems and reroute power away from damaged circuits, snatching it back just as quick to the stick.
Oh, gods of old Earth, she snarled. If any of you are still out there, give me a little grace.
The battlesphere was a tempest of metal, hard light and fire. Fighters of dozens of different marks duelled over the palace walls and the outworks, while through the storm of flame and ships, the drop pods of the traitors punched like iron fists. Aisha's mission was supposedly to destroy as many pods as she could before they touched down, but they were denied even the most unlikely shot by the enemy air armada, which protected the pods with furious tenacity. Her own Auspex returns and what little sense she could make from flight control's messages suggested larger landers were coming in, almost certainly laden with heavy equipment. Such slow-moving beasts were meat to Blue Zephyr, but they were even better protected. The enemy were everywhere, over everything, flights and flights of them, and now they had an additional legion's worth of air support to bolster them. The Imperial Defence Squadrons attempted to block enemy craft from penetrating the outer rings of the air defences, but some were bound to get through, and although most of them died in clouds of fire before they got far over the city, a handful wrought havoc, unleashing clouds of incendiary bombs. Phosphex fire had a special shine all of its own. Glaring magnesium white, it filled canyon streets with a deceptively beautiful light as it ate through metal, rockcrete, and flesh with equal veracity. There were poison smokes and acid fogs and other vile weapons deployed. Gas blanketed a part of the outer city. Heavier than air, it sank down through ventilation grills and fractured pavements to smother the people hiding below the palace. None of that would matter to her anymore if she couldn't shake her pursuer. Orders screamed in her vox speeds along with panicked calls for aid. The enemy was throwing more and more craft into the fight, and with the air defences already damaged and their own numbers whittled down by every engagement, the Loyalist squadrons were suffering. Gunfire flashed over her cockpit. She heaved Blue Zephyr to the side and burst through a streamer of flame, almost slamming into a Fury void fighter, spinning out of control across her flight path. A quick jerk of her stick sent Blue Zephyr skipping over it. Still, the legionary craft came. She got barely a glimpse of it, it was so fast, but she'd seen enough to get an identity. A Xiphon Interceptor, 14th Legion, one of the few machines she'd ever been afraid of facing in combat. Streams of missiles burned past her, shot with terrifying rapidity by the Interceptor's rotary launchers. She was getting boxed in by the pilot. Where she dodged the missiles, las cannon beams waited for her. He was closing in on the kill, and she was running out of options.
I'm coming! I'm coming!
Aisha almost cried out with joy when she heard Danda Bay's voice.
I've got him! Hold your course! I'll free you up! Get you back into it!
He swore.
This is a mess!
The fire from behind broke off as Bay joined the deadly game. Aisha caught another glimpse of the Xiphon. Its green and white heraldry was dirty, and its engine exhaust an unhealthy black, but it flew true enough, breaking off its pursuit of her to dodge Bay's counterattack. She immediately reacted, pulling herself up. Although she loved her ship as dearly as she did any person, she cursed Blue Zephyr's comparative lack of agility as it sped out wider than her foe.
I've lost him, Aisha! Watch out! I can't see him in all this!
There was a brief growl on the line, then nothing but static. So little to mark a man's death. Aisha climbed. She found the Xiphon and opened fire with all her armaments. The Xiphon plunged down in an evasive dive impossible for a baseline human to tolerate. She couldn't follow to finish him, and knew it was going to come again behind her.
Bright Hawks! Bright Hawks! Squadron Mistress Davenport requesting immediate support!
Nothing came back. She glanced at her unit markers. Half her ship lights were red. Another blinked from green to mortise glow as she watched. There was a garbled message from somewhere, then nothing but the howling of interference and the half-heard shouts of orders blasting over the Voxnet. She was on her own. Warning signifiers bleated that the Ziphon was lining her up again. Gritting her teeth, she pushed Blue Zephyr into a punishing dive, penetrating the weakened Aegis and coming down behind the walls of the palace. An obvious manoeuvre, but designed to goad her foe to follow. She yanked up a few hundred metres above the deck, skimming fast down burning streets. The palace was taking damage directly now. The Aegis still held back the worst of the orbital bombardment, and doubtless would for months more, but palace airspace was dense with enemy attack craft that rained down bombs on everything. She punched through a firestorm, narrowly avoided a toppling spire. All the while, the Ziphon was closing. The pilot chanced a few las cannon volleys, herding her again like livestock to the slaughter. An opportunity presented itself. A bridge ahead. Grandiose. Huge. Typically Imperial. Her Auspex was a welter of confused signals, but she knew it was there, in the poison, fog and fire. She hoped only that her foe did not. Accelerating as fast as she dared, she lessened her evasive movements, luring the Ziphon closer. Rockets stormed past her cockpit. Laslight flashed by. The bridge was there, somewhere. She misjudged. The bridge, ablaze from end to end, burst from the gas almost too suddenly for her to react. She pulled up to nearly vertically, making Blue Zephyr scream in machine pain. The Space Marine, for all his gifts, could not avoid the unexpected obstacle. The Ziphon slammed into the bridge and burst out the other side as a wingless stub in a shower of broken armor glass and masonry. She took a breath, then another, and banked back round. There was enough time to register three more fighters closing in on her from three separate directions. From that position, there was no escape. Her fingers stretched out to the Pict glued to the instrument panel. They did not reach her husband's face before Blue Zephyr was torn to flaming pieces. Palace Outworks, Daylight Wall, Section 16, 7th of Quartus. Ahead of the drop pods, a brief but widespread bombardment of shells detonated over the outworks with soft, flowery bangs. As they did not hit the ground, they seemed no threat at all. But then the defenders saw a paintburst spread begin its rapid sinking, and they understood the danger that these bombs posed.
Gas! Gas! Gas!
Whistles blew. Men shouted. Though millennia old, gas was still a much feared weapon. An attack by the very air induced an atavistic response deep in the limbic system. A fear of drowning, of suffocation. A fear common to all creatures that must breathe. Runnican swore in fluent underhive gutter slang. 1,000 hands went for cases at belts. The Space Marines, salted among the lines, remained impassive, protected from all environmental harms by their power armor. Katsuhiro was nervous of the Space Marines, for all the awe he felt. He had never wanted to be one, but at that moment he envied them their protection and their lack of fear. Though the conscripts had started out poorly equipped, the rate of attrition was so high that by that time most of the troops on the outworks had some form of protection against the poison. A gas mask, at least, looted from the dead, if not assigned to them personally. Katsuhiro fell into the former category. He had no training in how to use the mask he'd acquired, and nearly didn't manage to get it on. In his panic, he yanked on the straps all wrong and got the mask twisted about. A brown fog sifted around him as he struggled. He smelled acrid chemicals. Then, mercifully, he managed to pull the mask down to cover his face. Stinging eyes made him fear the worst, but they stopped streaming after a moment, and his breathing steadied. Katsuhiro's hearing was muffled by the mask. The gas mask had an unpleasant rubbery smell. The odour of gas stuck to the back of his throat and irritated it, but he couldn't spit, and he swallowed his gathering phlegm down repeatedly until he felt nauseous. The cloud, now a rich mustard brown, closed in over the troops. At first, all he could hear was his breathing, in and out, roar and hiss with the click of the mask's simple purifier. The gas thickened until Runnican was a grey shape, though he was only a couple of meters away. False calm descended, peaceful and poisonous. A man, blood running from blinded eyes and blistered lips, burst from the fog. Katsuhiro fired reflexively at him, missing in his fright. The man was clawing at his face, his screams turning to gurgles. His shoulder clipped Katsuhiro hard as he ran by, and the gas swallowed him again. Screaming came out of the fog. Not all of the troops had gas masks. Many that did couldn't work them, or had equipment that was damaged. They ran about in terror. One, with greater presence of mind, turned over bodies for a gas mask, finding one, slipping it on just in time. Two men brawled over a mask, neither had any hope of donning. Others tried to run, but fell, screaming froth from burning throats. Time slowed. Katsuhiro moved as a man underwater. Images of horror appeared as sheets of gas shifted like weeds in currents, each waft of poison opening a curtain on another scene of suffering. It seemed to go on forever, as awful things do, though according to Katsuhiro's chronometer, less than 2 minutes went by. The screams died, as men died. Vapor drank the sound of the wall guns, squeezing them down to sub-aquatic thumps. Laser flash dispersed by the gas turned the rolling clouds into alien thunderstorms of yellow and brown, lit by red lightning. A roaring scream sounded right over Katsuhiro. Glaring yellow appeared overhead, and a wash of heat blasted the poison fog aside. A huge metal ovoid bore right down on him. He was frozen, sure he would be crushed. Other men, revealed by the backwash of the descending pod, were close to breaking, but a giant in red stood among them, his bolter ready, shouting, "Stand firm, servants of terror!" Their panic quelled, they held. A storm of tracer bullets ripped around the vehicle, puncturing it many times. Half its thrusters went out, and it tilted over, hurtling off into the wastes beyond the third defence line. It was only the first. A drop pod assault was an intentionally terrifying spectacle. The pods fell so fast they seemed to be upon the verge of destruction, only firing their retro thrusters at the last minute to slow their descent from fatal velocity. They smashed into the ground with a force that would kill an unmodified human outright, even one lucky enough to wear power armor. The noise they made was tremendous, like containers full of scrap metal slammed into rock. Explosive bolts went off in crackling bursts, and the huge petal doors fell down with metallic booms. There were hundreds of them, suddenly, crowding the sky, jets roaring, some exploding. The fury of the wall guns was cutting over the third line, streaks of bullets and laslight almost close enough to touch, and all the roaring added to the havoc. More soft thumps overhead, more gas floated down. Different colours, copper oxide greens and heavy yellows, powder reds and blues. Electromag munitions blew, filling the fog with crackling energy that earthed on the ceramite of the space marines in crawling displays of lightning.
"Stand firm!"
roared the space marines, their deep voices pushed into inhumanity by the harshening of helmet voxes.
"Stand firm!"
they shouted, and no one dared run. Katsuhiro had only an impression of the warriors disembarking from their pods before the thickening gas hid them all. Again, so much transpired in so short a space of time, seconds maybe, but fearful years crawled by. He saw nothing in the murk, but the Space Marines' auto-senses penetrated it easily, and they called out once again,
"They come! Ready weapons! For the Emperor!"
The Space Marines brought up their bolters to their shoulders and opened fire. There were perhaps 2 dozen Blood Angels on that section of the rampart, nothing compared to the massed thousands who had fought on alien worlds the length and breadth of the galaxy. And yet the report of their bolters firing, even in such thin numbers, struck Katsuhiro with terror. They barked like hellhounds out of ancient myth, each round the equal of another age's cannon shot. Bastion 16's guns raked past the rampart's front. Katsuhiro saw large shapes collapse. The wall guns still fired over their heads at the drop pods. So much noise! The first of the enemy legionaries came out of the gas in a line, their own bolters firing. A human voice bellowed along the rampart,
"Troopers of the Kushtan Nagarda, present arms!"
2 men down from Katsuhiro, a soldier was hit in the shoulder by a bolt round. When the mass reactive detonated, the man's torso, from his right shoulder to his hip, ceased to be. A mist of blood joined the fog. The end of his left arm was blown clear. The right arm and the head, connected by shredded bridges of tissue, collapsed inwards.
"Ready!"
the human officer bellowed. Katsuhiro rested his gun on the rampart's lip. Though the men were sheltered by the fortification, in most cases only their heads exposed, they were still being hit, still dying. The Blood Angels knelt, but they were so big their chests protruded over the defense line. Bolt rounds blew on their armor, taking out chunks of metallo-ceramic from the plates. The enemy were targeting them in favor of the lesser men. Incredibly, so it seemed to Katsuhiro, one of the Crimson Angels fell, his chest a bloody ruin.
"Aim!"
the officer roared. Katsuhiro did his best to ignore the carnage among his fellow defenders. He'd played his part in repelling 6 assaults upon the defense line. He'd been bombed. He was ill, hungry, cold, and exhausted. But he had not yet faced traitor legionaries. He struggled to draw a bead on the warriors coming to kill him. Just aiming at them seemed profane somehow, a final inversion of how things were meant to be. Then they came from the fog, and terror showed a new face. They wore green and white armor, adorned with images of death. Where the Blood Angels were crimson and glorious, these beings were debased, though they wore the same war gear and had been created the same way. Their battle plate was filthy and streaked with dirt and rust. From their vision and breathing slits, oily fluids dribbled. Black smoke poured from the exhaust vents on their power plants. They shuffled forwards without the Blood Angel's grace, while preceding them was a stench of sickness, the collective illness of a hospice ward in time of plague distilled. They were dead men walking, and yet they would not fall. Autocannon rounds, bolts, las cannon shots, and explosive shells fell among them. Armor shattered on their bodies, but if they dropped, they climbed back up. Katsuhiro saw one riddled with dozens of hits from the loyal Space Marines. Only when a bolt punched through his helm and detonated in his skull did the filthy giant collapse to his knees and pitch forwards into the mud. Katsuhiro drew a bead on a warrior advancing without his helmet. He was getting close, close enough to see wild, lidless eyes in a face as drawn as a skull and a black-lipped mouth forever set in death's humorless grin.
"Fire!"
the officer ordered. Katsuhiro squeezed the trigger. Hundreds of las beams flickered through the fog. His own shot scored clean black through the slime, weeping from the monster's armor plates. But the guns of the mortals were of little use against legionary battleplate. Lucky shots to eyes and soft seal joints might do some harm, but such wounds were nothing to the corrupted legionaries. A battle cry went up behind the advancing traitors, and foes more suited to Katsuhiro's gun emerged. Through the gas, the lost and the damned charged the line again. Jagatai Khan's Orju were nearing the wall when the gas shells choked the sky. Dirty smoke rushed out, so thick his jetbike engines coughed when the intakes sucked it in. Guns boomed on both sides. He raced between the tracks of death, his Auspex picking out the features of the ground in pulses of lurid green. The Khan was blessed with the best eyesight that could be engineered into a human being, and marvellous war gear to enhance it. But in that murk, he was half-blind. Drop pods screamed past him, blasting shafts into the gas that closed quickly. He was close to home when a haywire shell, cast down from orbit to blind the palace's machine eyes, exploded right by his jet bike. A pulse of electromagnetism so violent it made his armor scream shut down his engines. Like a javelin cast by the thunder gods of Chogoris, Jagatai Khan's jet bike plunged down, its golden prow plowed poison mist, then earth. The Khan leapt free at the point of impact. He rolled twice, using the momentum of the fall to launch himself back to his feet, where he skidded to a halt, tulwar poised to strike. He stood ready, every sense alert in the muffled battle zone. His warriors sped overhead. Guns coughed gently. Interference crackled in his helm, his communications useless in the electromagnetic bombardment. Then they came for him. The great angel watched the gases of the Death Guard envelop the defense lines, retreat momentarily under the blast of drop pod rocket motors, then surge back in, engulfing the top of Bastion 16 and banking high against the palace walls. Throughout, he kept his eyes forwards, following his brother's progress. He watched the haywire shells crackle and saw the Khan plunge into the gas banks as more drop pods screamed down from on high. "There," he said. He pointed with the spear of Telesto into the gas. "The moment is at hand. Our foe blinds our communications, but you must find me. My brother! My brother! To the aid of my brother!" he shouted. Without waiting for confirmation from his men, Sanguinius spread his wings and threw himself from the top of Bastion 16 into the deadly fog.